The conference is now being recorded.
Welcome to the investor conference call for NAOS Listed Investment Companies. Your host is Sebastian Evans, Managing Director and Chief Investment Officer of NAOS Asset Management Limited. Please go ahead, Sebastian.
Great. Thank you very much, Lisa, and thank you everyone for joining the call this morning. Just as some admin, if you find it hard to hear me or if there's any technical issues, just give the office a call or send an email and we can sort it out. This is obviously the quarterly presentation for the fourth quarter of financial year 19. So in essence, a little bit of a summary for FY19. That'll obviously be covered off more in more detail at our roadshow, which is in September. The documents or the materials were lodged on the ASX and also sent out to our email list, distribution list this morning. So if you could refer to that, that's what I'll be speaking to. I'll jump straight to slide two, obviously the disclaimer. As I always say, I do refer to a number of stocks in this presentation, so obviously do your own homework. Clearly don't rely on our comments. On slide three, just the NAOS Asset Management, really just more of a mission statement. This is a new slide just for those. There's quite a few people on this call, some who don't know NAOS. Clearly, to provide you with a little bit of context, NAOS has been around. We first listed our first LIC in 2013 with 400 shareholders and just about $18 million of FUM. Today we run three LICs with about 260 million and 8,000 shareholders. The two things that have never changed is that, we have significant, staff and directors have significant shareholdings in all of the LICs. Me and my staff don't trade personally. All of our funds are in the LICs. We're committed to an ESG philosophy in all of our investments, and most importantly, our focus is on the micro, small, and mid-cap industrial stocks of the Australian stock market, and obviously that excludes resources and other businesses that I'll get to. On slide four, this is just really the NAOS investment beliefs. I've spoken to this a number of times. As most of you would know, we're very much, we don't like to pigeonhole ourselves as value or growth investors. We look for businesses that represent value, but obviously we expect them to grow over the longer term. It's very much a concentrated strategy, so, 10 to 15 stocks per portfolio generally. We invest for the long term, so some investments have been in the funds for over 6 years now. As an LIC, we don't need to invest in liquid businesses. We tend to invest in businesses that represent value, even if they are illiquid. We don't follow the index. We only follow really or look at industrial type businesses generally, so profitable businesses, businesses with revenue. The ESG overlay I've mentioned, and you can see there what we screen out, so what we can't invest in. And we tend to invest in a number of businesses that have a lot of management alignment, just like our own LIC. So we look for a lot of our investments you will find entrepreneurs that have started these businesses and listed them. They clearly have a lot of skin in the game and very much tied to the share price and have the same, I suppose, considerations as any ordinary shareholder. On slide five, just to wrap up, I suppose, the general information on NAOS. So we really break down our investment mandate into two parts. First and foremost, we seek to protect investor capital while providing sustainable growing stream of fully franked dividends, and just as importantly, growth above the benchmark over the long term. We then look to do this by investing in, micro to small to mid-cap companies with an industrial focus regardless of size and or liquidity. That's what NAOS does. We're very much true to that label, and we won't be deviating from that mandate anytime soon. On slide six, we get a lot of questions about how the LICs are different. This is just a visual interpretation of how they are different. NCC, very much a micro-cap LIC, so you can see on the bottom axis there, invest in businesses between 10 to 150 million. NSC, invest in businesses between 100 to a billion. And NAC is really around that, 400 million to $6 billion mark. But they're all outside the top 50. We leave investing in the top 50 to yourselves or other fund managers. Slide seven, this is a new slide, but I think it really does highlight the struggles that we found in FY19. Just as importantly, we don't shy away from that. This is our portfolio performance for each of the LICs over the past six and a bit years. And what I really wanted to highlight is this is the first negative year we've had for both NCC and NAC, just as importantly for the NSC shareholders, who I very much appreciate, have not had the best experience to date. So I'm just reading some of the comment about my microphone. You can see, obviously, for the past 6 years, we go through periods of extreme, obviously, outperformance, and then, I suppose, more moderate performance. But clearly, in FY19, we went through a period where we struggled for a number of reasons that I'll go through. And I think what it really highlights is it's really our investment strategy, I would say, and philosophy that has simply not been in vogue. Clearly, we've made some mistakes. We don't shy away from that. But very much our strategy and philosophy is not, it has not been the right philosophy and strategy to be investing in these type of markets, as many of you would be aware of. On slide 8, this really just breaks down our performance over the long term relative to our standard deviation. So you can see that in regards to NCC, our performance has been a bit over 11% per annum. Yet, even though we run only a very concentrated portfolio, our volatility is lower than the market, and it's significantly lower than the market in down months. So when the market's down, we tend not to be down anywhere near as much as the market. The same applies for NAC. The performance obviously is better than the market at a bit over 11%. But the standard deviation and downside deviations are very much comparable to the market. So obviously as a fund manager, not only are you trying to produce returns, you're trying to produce better risk-adjusted returns at the end of the day as well. Moving on to the market commentary, and there's a number of ways you can really cut all this information. I know a lot of other fund managers have been touching on it. So I really wanted to keep it quite simple. This table here looks at a number of high growth and technology stocks that, you know, really continued to outperform in FY19. You know, they were big performers in FY18, and they continued once again into FY19, where I suppose many investors, including ourselves, probably didn't expect it, to continue at that rate. So you can see the stocks that we mentioned are Afterpay, WiseTech, Appen, IDP Education. In some way, shape or form, they would be considered, you know, technology stocks. But obviously, there's a subsector of that. Afterpay would be considered a fintech, I suppose. IDP Education, very much an education play, you know, whereby Nearmap and Altium are very much technology stocks. You can see there, in regards to index points, to the small ordinaries, that added 125 points to the index over FY19. So to put that in context, that's about, off the top of my head, it's about 5%, 4 to 5% they added to the index movement over FY19. So if you took out these movements, or you assume they had a zero return, the index would have returned negative 5.25%. So it shows you how poorly the rest of the market really did, you know, in respect of the returns over FY19. You know, more importantly, we get a lot of comments, and I probably get a comment every month about why you don't invest in Afterpay. And there's a number of reasons why we haven't invested in Afterpay. But I think from a valuation perspective, you know, if you look at it, you know, at this level, you know, Afterpay is expected to earn $17 million at the EBITDA line, so before depreciation, amortization, and tax. If you look at the market cap and what the market's valuing in that business at, you're applying a 380 times multiple to that EBITDA level. If you then look at all of those businesses, you can see they're all at EBITDA multiples of greater than 30 times. So it gives you an average of 110 times EV to EBITDA for all of those businesses. I think obviously that's a very simplistic way to look at it, because if you go to the next slide, people are willing to pay big multiples for businesses that are willing to grow. That doesn't make them bad businesses, and I don't think we can close our eyes to these statistics and say, well, just because they have an expensive FY19 multiple and we shouldn't invest in them, because it comes down to the growth rate of these businesses. And then to highlight this and to try and get this point across, I made up a little table that really looks at an imaginary business, and it assumes that this business earned $100 this year. And then I say, all right, well, if I assume that business today is valued at 110 times EBITDA, as per the table previously, then that gives you a share price, obviously, of $11. Obviously, there's a number of shares that I've divided that by. So if I'm to say, well, if I believe that business can grow over the next 5 years, then obviously there's a growth rate that needs to be assumed for me just to maintain that share price. So the two assumptions are that we believe that multiple will reduce from 110 to 15 over the next 5 years. You know, it's a fact that businesses, as they grow and as they mature, you know, think BHP, think CBA, some of these bigger industrial type businesses, you know, multiples reduce because they mature. Businesses find it harder to grow as they get bigger and more cumbersome. So we believe that 15 times multiple is fair. It's above the market, but still fair. So to maintain an $11 share price over the next 5 years, that business would need to grow its earnings each year at 50% per annum for the next 5 years just to maintain an $11 share price, in this case $11.39. That may well be possible, but we believe when you look at some of these businesses, you know, there will be some businesses that can probably grow at that rate, but there will be others that will not be able to grow at that rate. And I think when you apply, you know, a sensitivity analysis and say, well, if that EBITDA growth only goes at 20 times, you know, the effect on the share price and considering the multiple will come down a lot because the growth rates aren't there and the market will be disappointed, you will lose an awful lot of your capital. You know, it won't be 10% or 20%, it could be 70 to 80%. And we're simply not willing to take that risk for our investors, and that's not how we invest. Considering a lot of these businesses and the markets they operate in, they move at a very rapid pace, at a pace that I would argue very few investors can understand in the depth that they really need to make these sort of investments at these levels. On slide 11, this is more, I suppose, looks at more of the NAC universe, but I was interesting nevertheless to show that in regards to the returns of the index, so the ASX 300 Industrials Index, that includes the banks and Transurban and businesses like that, there were very few businesses that produced any returns. So what it's telling you is for a fund manager or any investor for that matter to produce a significant return over the last year, it really had to come down to stock selection, and you had to have two or three businesses that outperformed significantly. You can see further to the right, you know, they're the type of businesses that added more basis points to the index. You know, they're the businesses that you really need to have. And for a fund manager, clearly that was quite difficult, and even more difficult with the fact that many of these businesses are businesses that you wouldn't expect to outperform at the rate they did. So in this market, it was a lot of the businesses that have some, you know, relation to interest rates. So as interest rates have come down recently, you know, REITs have been one of the best performers in the markets over the past 12 months. You know, Goodman Group, you know, infrastructure businesses like Transurban, for example, even Telstra has been a significant outperformer. And it's not necessarily in relation to their business and how they're growing their earnings. It's more of a relative valuation of saying, well, I'm only getting 2% in a term deposit, so I can go and buy a Transurban share and get a 3.5% yield. So I believe that's a better risk return trade-off, so I'll go and buy a Transurban share. And then the next person does and pushes the share price up again. On slide 12, we obviously put this in all our slides, and it's really what NAOS does and what we look for in any business. But as a team, you know, I always try to focus on, I try to get the team to focus on just looking at a business that we can understand and focusing on what we can control. So we invest in businesses that have revenue and can drive margin growth. They've got balance sheet flexibility. You know, they're valued on today's earnings and not necessarily they don't factor in any growth into the future. They've got proven management teams. They focus on a core competency that they do well and they understand well. And then obviously we're ESG aware as well. So obviously we believe that plays into the business risk over the longer term and creates much more of a sustainable business over the longer term. So with that, I'm going to pass on to Portfolio Manager Rob Miller to touch on some of the key events in NCC and also NSC, and then I'll return to finish off the presentation.
thanks very much, Sebastian. So just firstly, I'll touch on NCC here and obviously two key events within the portfolio that occurred during the fourth quarter of FY19. Firstly, BTC Health, which is our medical supplies and distribution business, made a pretty key acquisition in which they raised money, raised about $8 million, and we participated in that raise. They bought an infusion pumps business out of another listed company. The stock code's AHZ on that business. Through which they bought the business out of. What it kind of does for BTC is it gives them a key platform for which to grow their business in many different areas, and in what we see would be earnings accretive over the medium to longer term. Firstly, it gives them a core sales team and base throughout Australia and New Zealand, which in our opinion are slightly underutilised at the moment. They're only in about 20% of their target market, so we think there's upside within the existing market they operate within. Furthermore, we think that sales force has the ability to sell additional products on top of what they're already doing. So that cross-sell opportunity into the same customer base. It's very much a building block for this business to, grow over the medium to longer term. What is also pleasing is there's been director buying on market subsequent to the event and the capital raising. So we feel we're very much aligned with directors on this one. Secondly, Wingara, which is our hay processing and meat processing business based out of Victoria, they released their full year FY19 results. They run a March year end, which is relatively typical of agricultural businesses. The key kind of points from those results were, an EBITDA of circa $5 million for the year, which was significant growth on the previous year. What is really kind of pleasing for us is they've completed the Raywood hay processing site, and this has pretty much all been funded through reinvesting cash flow that the business has generated from the other areas. So we think now going into FY20, they've got a clean year to be able to launch into this new Raywood facility, so we would expect further earnings growth there. One key thing as well, which was the probably main catalyst late in the quarter for this business, has been the sale and lease back of a property that they hold within their Osco blast freezing business. So they bought that business circa 2 years ago now for about $18 million, of which $15 million was the actual value of the land. So that's been sold. They've generated a profit on that. And the sale and lease back is effectively a mechanism to pay down debt and also reinvest the capital and the excess cash back into the business in areas which we believe would provide a higher return on equity over time. Just coming to the NCC dividend profile here on this next page, I guess the key thing to point out here is that we are true to label in terms of being a microcap specialist within this portfolio, as you can see with the average market cap there. The share price has appreciated since the end of June. It's now circa $1.05, $1.06. And I guess the key thing here, when we first set up this LIC in 2013, one of the objectives was to pay a growing stream of dividends, franked to the maximum extent possible. We've been able to deliver upon that to date. And as you can see there, we've paid circa 40 cents of cumulative dividends. And if you gross that up, it's about 56 cents. So you compare that to a share price of $1.05, you're close to halfway there in terms of what we've actually paid back to shareholders. Coming on to NSC now, I might just spend a little bit of time here talking about a new position that we've got being Experience Co. Experience Co, for those that hadn't heard of it before, is it's a skydiving business that also has other tourism assets up in Queensland. This business is one we've known since it IPO'd, probably 4 or 5 years ago now, as a pure play skydiving business. Since then, we've always kind of watched it, never really invested in it, and since then, the business, in our opinion, has gone astray, making non-core acquisitions, and I think you've seen that reflected in where the current share price is. So we're looking at this business now essentially fresh, and we've met the management team and we've done quite a bit of work kind of looking at the industry check and backgrounding the board and management team. The new CEO, I believe, starts on Monday. So I must stress it's a small position at this point in time. The new management team needs to put runs on the board for us to be comfortable, but the pedigree they have, particularly the chairman, who was the ex-CEO of Mantra and is the current chairman of Tourism Australia, and the new CEO coming into the job is was the ex-CEO of Tourism Australia, so they've got a working relationship already, which we like. The key reasons for the investment, obviously management is important. The business is lowly geared, and we believe the risk-return profile at circa 5x EBITDA on consensus, we're not paying much for potential upside versus the downside that you know, probably has already occurred in our opinion in this business. The core business here is skydiving assets. The rest for us is non-core to the large extent, and you know, we would be of the opinion that capital management initiatives may happen in time for the non-core assets. And the core assets being skydiving in both Australia and New Zealand. This business has circa 70% market share across both markets. It's a variable cost base on skydiving, which is good if the weather is you know, obviously not up to scratch to be able to skydive. And the industry data suggests long-term consistent growth has occurred in the past for this. So it's a relatively stable growth business. And you've pretty much got pricing power because by providing the best quality operations, you can charge a premium for that. So we think if the company goes back to its core objectives there and then puts runs on the board, there's opportunities overseas to effectively consolidate what are cottage industries, particularly in, say, the US, which is a very big skydiving market and is ripe for consolidation. And we feel that Experience Co could do that over time. Secondly, Big River, which is our building supplies and distribution business. This business is over 100 years old. It's obviously had a long track record of going through cycles, and we've seen a bit of a cycle of late across the industry whereby you know, there's been pressure. However, coming back to Sebastian's earlier point about investing in businesses that can control what they can control, we believe Big River has done a good job of that despite the kind of macro headwinds, which we think will turn into tailwinds in due course. We're big believers in the strategy of the management there, which is to build out a building distributions business. And the key thing here in the quarter was two acquisitions they made in New Zealand. They raised money for this and paid circa $18 million. We participated in those raisings. And now we have Big River, I should say, have an opportunity to sell into a new market, being New Zealand, and cross-sell products both out of New Zealand into their existing market and customer base in Australia and vice versa back into New Zealand. The key here as well, circa 90% of the EBITDA now is in building supplies and distribution, and we believe the market is still very fragmented despite Bunnings and Metcash. And there's a very much a real opportunity for a third player within that market to grow and consolidate. And just finally, before I hand back to Sebastian, just on the NSC overview there, the share price has ticked up, which is pleasing from that kind of 56 level to where it is now. And if you gross up the dividend profile from 9 cents, it's about 13 cents. And as you can see there, we switched to quarterly dividends about 3 quarters ago. And with that, I'll hand back to Sebastian.
Thanks, Rob. I'll finish off now with NAC and then a couple of slides after that. So in regards to NAC in the fourth quarter of 19, it was reasonably active as per the other two LICs. So the first point was we've initiated or entered into a new position being AP Eagers. So for those of you that don't know, AP Eagers is a listed business and is the largest owner of car dealerships and also truck dealerships in Australia. Very much dominating, I suppose, the Eastern Seaboard. And they entered into an agreement to acquire another very large business that's dominant in Western Australia, being Automotive Holdings Group. Two very different businesses in the fact that AP Eagers, to put in context, even against the very poor backdrop for car sales over the last year, were still able to maintain their earnings profile, predominantly due to obviously efficiencies, but also truck sales held up reasonably well with a lot of the infrastructure spending going on. As to AHG, though, had a very, very poor year. It was an overgeared business. Also have a logistics business that's non-core, which will be sold. And then obviously today, some of you may have seen that the ACCC have let this deal go through subject to some minor divestments. So for us, we believe the opportunity lies obviously not in the macro backdrop changing, but more importantly, the AP Eagers management team getting their hands on these assets. And that we think there's a lot of synergy. So in regards to property, some of the rents they're paying, you know, their buying power, just being smarter business operators. We think there's a lot of earnings upside in regards to the synergies that they can obviously get out of AHG. And then the second part of that is how much earnings potential they can grow out of growing their direct finance business. So prior to a lot of the changes that have come through post the Royal Commission and some of the changes made in regards to getting finance through your car dealership, obviously that model has now changed significantly and it's hurt a lot of car dealerships. But in AP Eagers' view, there's a significant opportunity for them to obviously do it well and offer a strong finance product and service offering to their clients. And if they can build this up through their network and, say, get a reasonable level of penetration, you know, say a third, for example, of all cars sold as financed through AP Eagers, then there's a significant earnings uplift as well. And importantly, and the most important thing for us is, you know, that's a strong management team, great balance sheet. They own a lot of their own land and property, and we think that gives them a lot of flexibility to continue to grow in the future. Secondly, People Infrastructure Group has been a real stellar performer for the NAC portfolio. You know, they completed a $20 million equity raising and finalised two acquisitions, obviously both within the healthcare staffing industry. And pleasingly, they also stated that the second half of 19 has been stronger than FY, the first half of 19, which is pleasing considering that the first half of 19 was a stellar half. We continue to like this business. Obviously, it's run by an excellent management team, but most importantly, you know, the dynamics and the thematics around, you know, healthcare, the NDIS scheme, and aging population, you know, there is going to be more requirements to find qualified staff who can fill the voids and the opportunities that come up from these large service providers. You need to be nimble, you need to have quality staff, and if you don't, obviously you won't get rid of the repeat business, but if you do, you will get a lot of repeat business from very large operators in a market that is growing at a significant and very steady clip. So that's why we think that's an excellent business and an industry and I suppose a thematic that's actually very hard to get a pure exposure to. It's not that easy to get an exposure to healthcare and the aging demographic. Moving on to slide 18. As per the other slides, this just touches on the overview. So you can see the share price was 82.5. I think today it's about 85 or 86 cents. You know, the businesses in NAC are much larger. They're around $400 million when you weight them by their weight in the portfolio. So it's not just a simple average. And you can see there the dividend profile's grown, has grown every year so far up until this year. Clearly, we've still got to declare our fourth quarter dividend yet. So we've paid out a total of 21 cents of fully franked dividends, which is almost 30 cents when you've grossed it up over the last 5 years. Slide 19 just looks at capital management initiatives that we talk about at NAOS across all three of the LICs, and I think it's important to speak about considering the LIC market has gone through a lot of volatility and change over the past 6 months. So obviously, firstly, you know, the NSC buyback, we commenced a buyback in the fourth quarter of 19. You can see we've given you a chart there of how many shares that we've bought back. And as we said all along, you know, this buyback was not, was not here to be a buyback by name. It's more to be a buyback by action. And you can see that we've grown the number of shares that we've bought back over each of the past 3 months. And we'll continue to do so as long as it represents the best use of shareholders' capital. In the sense that, you know, obviously you want to close the discount to NTA, but more importantly, if we can buy shares at a discount to NTA, then it obviously increases our NTA higher as we cancel them. So we believe that's the best use of shareholders' capital. NAC, the same applies there. Obviously, it was more recent. It was only announced on the 13th of June, but people can see that's been reasonably active as well. In regards to NCC, we issued a 1-for-4 bonus option issue. Something that probably hasn't been done a whole lot in the LIC space. And I just want to make it clear, you know, the reason why we did it, and I'm very open about this, is it's probably a few key points. The first being, you know, we believe there's a lot of inherent value in the NCC portfolio, in all our portfolios, but specifically NCC. So we believe it was a good time to obviously issue a small amount of options to our very loyal shareholder base, which provides them the upside should the NTA increase over time. You know, most importantly, though, and I've said this since day dot, you know, we would like to close this fund at a bit over $100 million. So So we believe if we can perform over the next 2 years and get those options exercised, then that fund will be over $100 million and we'll close it to any external future capital raisings and just manage that pot of money, because we believe that's all we can manage in that micro end of the market. And then dividends, importantly. I get a lot of feedback on dividends. Some people like them, some people don't like them, some people prefer buybacks. But I think we've found it provides a level of sustainability and transparency for all of our shareholders. All of our dividends pay fully franked dividends to date. Obviously we would like to grow that over time, assuming the performance is there, because we understand people do require a level of income. And at the same time, we do state that our dividend reinvestment plan buys shares on market. So we don't issue shares in a DRP if the shares are below NTA. So for NSC, for example, you can see we've bought back 2 million shares through the buyback. I think the DRP's bought back an equivalent amount as well. So you'd probably say we've bought almost 4 million shares back between the dividend or the DRP and the buyback. Just moving on to the last slide. As some of you may or may not be aware, it's that time of the year again when we do our National Investor Roadshow. It's not till September, but obviously if you would like to register, you can send an email to inquiries@naos and just state the city you'd like to attend and obviously the number of attendees. Otherwise, you would have received an email, and I think there's an invitation on our website as well that you can click on and you can just register there. But as you can see, we'll be presenting in 6 of the major cities across Australia. Before I get the questions, I've been